I rely on computers every day. As a matter of fact, as I'm sitting here looking around in the studio, I'm relying on three separate computers, as a matter of fact, to help along with the show. You probably rely on computers for a lot of things, too. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along, and it's great when they work, but when they don't work, that's a problem. And that's when Jesse LeGru comes in. He's technical team lead with the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, or DOIT, focuses on desktop and laptop security projects, and certainly can talk about things like Windows 10. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Jesse LeGru, welcome back.
Great to be here.
Great to have you back, as a matter of fact. And let's take on Windows 10. It's been out for a while now. I don't know. Has it been... What's your opinion on how it's been received? I know a lot of people haven't gone to it yet.
Yeah, and a lot of people buying new computers now are really getting Windows 10 on them. As far as usability, everyone that I know is using it likes it. As far as, you know, whether you want to upgrade or not is kind of a big question. It depends on, you know, how old your hardware is, whether it's going to be supported. But right now, if you have Windows 7 or 8, you actually do have the option to upgrade for free. So a lot of the things that are available, unless you have really old applications, that's probably a good idea to back up your data and give it a shot. A lot of people didn't like Windows 8 with the kind of the lack of the start menu and the navigation, but they brought that back with Windows 10, so it's a little bit more user-friendly for people who are used to earlier versions of Windows. But they do have a few other added features, which a lot of people might use, some people don't. There's always something that you don't use, but very well regarded, and if you have other devices, other Microsoft devices, there's some integration features with Xbox, some search features and organization features that people might use that also, you know, allow it to translate onto Android and other devices. So there's some benefits to it. Depends what you're using your computer for, but to make sure you have the latest operating system, you know, you get the latest updates, it's going to be supported for quite some time. But overall, as far as functionality, it works well.
Yeah, it should. Arlene in New Berlin has something on Windows 7. Arlene, hi.
Good morning. Thank you for having this show. Honest to God, I should have been born in this generation instead of the generation I was born in. But anyway, I just had my husband's computer updated. He had XP, so I had a brand new system. I have a desktop. It's Windows 7, and I have a company in Waukesha that takes care of the computer if I have any glitches. I wanted to know how long they are going to update on Windows 7.
Yeah.
And right now, you can get updates actually until about January of 2020. So you've got almost 4 years until you need to worry about upgrading to Windows 10. Since you do have Windows 7, even if you haven't seen the prompts yet, you probably will in the future, you will have the option, as long as, you know, the hardware is supported, to even upgrade to Windows 10. So you can always upgrade if you want to, but you should be good for just about 4 years.
And it would be conducive for me to have the company that I work with update my computer rather than myself, because I really don't know how to get around a computer that well.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and if you do have experts who already work on your computer and you like them quite a bit, I would say have them do the upgrade. Yep, let them do the work for you. They can do any of the necessary work beforehand, taking backups and upgrade. But at least the software itself is free as long as you do have Windows 7 or above.
Good luck, Arlene. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Mallory in Red Wing, Minnesota has a question for you, Jesse. Hi, Mallory.
Hi. So I am using a computer that I recently upgraded to Windows 10, and I was wondering, is there an easy way to move programs between drives, or do I still just have to uninstall and reinstall?
And it's kind of an interesting little feature, but they did add an option with Windows 10 to make that a little bit more user-friendly. I haven't used the feature myself. And just knowing how computers have worked in the past, it also kind of scares me a little bit. But apparently it does work. There is, in your control panel, there is an apps and features option. It shows you the various applications that you have installed, when they were installed, etc. But as soon as it populates all the information for your applications, there is a move button. Where you can move the application from one drive to another. It's something that definitely with previous versions of Windows was very dangerous just because, you know, some weird items may not be the pointed the direction they should be. But in theory, you should be able to actually use that move feature and move it to a completely different drive. I'm guessing you're going to see, you know, more success just based on who developed the application. The feature is there. You should hopefully just be able to hit the move feature for that program in the apps and features.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mallory, for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your computer questions as we visit with Jesse LeGrew, technical team lead within the UW Madison's Division of Information Technology, or do it. Marie writes that she needs to run Office and QuickBooks on a tablet. She does not like web-based programs because her internet connection is very slow. Can you recommend a tablet that you would use for this? She has a budget of around $1,100.
And for... Since a lot of these are really mainly run on Windows, I generally would suggest a Windows tablet, and there are actually a lot of them out there. You can get them from Microsoft, you can get them from Dell. As far as which one, I generally do like the Microsoft Surface. They're a little bit more expensive, but definitely have a lot more power that's going to last a longer amount of time. Mm-hmm. But I've also used the Dell Venue tablets, which are also Windows-based. One thing to keep in mind, really, is how much of a screen do you want? Because some of them can be very, very small, and some of them can be very large. So that's going to be... a consideration, but I think if you get any of the what they call Core i3 or Core i5 processors, generally the it's going to have enough power for what you're needing. Obviously, the more power, the better, depending on if it's really intensive. But I think for the basic use, depending on how large your QuickBooks installation is, because those can actually have quite a bit of data behind them and use some more power. I always recommend the Surface just because I actually like them a lot, but they are more expensive. But I've had a lot of good success with the Dell Venue tablets. But I would go probably Windows-based for what you need. But there's a large variety, whether it costs $400 or it costs $2,000 to $3,000. And the Dell Venue tablets have been really great. I'd say, you know, go to a few stores, check them out, play with them. And usually they're going to have Office installed in the display so you can see how responsive it is. But I would say I like the Dell Venues. The Surfaces are great as well.
Just last week, there was news out about wireless mice and keyboards being susceptible to hackers. What can you tell us about these mouse jacking operations that are going on, Jesse?
Yeah, so specifically, this was, for mainly Logitech mice. So they have something called Unify. It allows you to use many different devices with one little wireless adapter. A lot of people use Bluetooth keyboards and mice. This is completely different. It's unaffected. These actual little wireless devices, they transmit the same as a lot of phones and actually other wireless, so 2.4 gigahertz. But basically, people are able to kind of get in the middle of that and actually kind of take control of different devices or get data from them. Personally, I'm always more concerned about keyboards than I am about mice, just because if you are able to get data from that transmission, you might be able to grab keystrokes, which could be usernames and passwords.
Would not be good.
And they this came out from a private security firm that said, hey, we found this and we were able to break into it. But even with this kind of attack, you have to be physically close to the device you're attacking. You have to have a lot more information. So most people in their houses are going to be fine. If you're in a coffee shop, you might have, you know, more of an issue. But there's already a patch out there for it, at least for the Logitech devices. So even if you, you know, look up mouse jacking or mouse hacking and you look up Logitech, you're going to find an update for it. But it's a little disturbing, and, you know, luckily if you have Bluetooth devices, you don't have to worry about it, but there's even something called blue snarfing, so you can actually, you know, attack Bluetooth devices. So there's always a risk when you have any kind of wireless device. This is just one thing that came up for one specific product. If you're to be, you know, exceptionally paranoid, only use cables. You know, you could house yourself in a Faraday cage so you don't have any transmissions coming in or out. But in this case, there's a security vulnerability. Luckily, there's a patch out fairly quickly to fix it.
Well, you mentioning breaking in reminded me of all the news about iPhone encryption. And, you know, I've talked to different people about this, and they said, well, why can't the iPhone people unencrypt that one single phone and allow the information within the phone to be used without giving away the encryption itself? But there's probably a whole lot more to it than that.
Yeah, and in theory, you know, if they could, it's kind of setting a precedent, which is the most dangerous thing. If I do this once, well, I'm going to be kind of expected to do it again and again and again. And they're all, you know, considering about the RITS Act and whether Apple should be able to decrypt this phone or not, but also whether the government's taken every step they can internally to try to decrypt the phone. They were talking about whether the FBI is actually working with the NSA, and maybe they should be if they're not. So a lot of discussions around that. Apple was trying to, you know, put on the back burner, you need to talk to the NSA. But there's obviously a lot within this we don't know. But the biggest thing is really for these, you know, vendors like Apple or Google to be put into a position where they're really handing over customer data. And, you know, it's just the precedent they don't want to set that, we're going to have a backdoor for everything. So the government's able to get your data whenever they want to. And the biggest push Apple, you know, had for these new phones was to make sure that your data is safe.
That
was
right.
One of the primary aspects of it. And this is just, all right, do we turn over the data or do we not? But when people want to make sure their data is safe, they're looking at from that personal perspective of somebody using the device. The device is for them to keep their stuff private. So it's difficult when coming up against the government saying, hey, you know, we have a reason for this to get this data. But a lot of people are just saying, you know, you should be talking to the NSA. I hear they can probably do that for you. But I think there's really a big push to try to set a precedent. So,
I can see it. I can definitely see Apple's reluctance for sure. And makes good sense, I'm sure, on their part. For sure.
Yeah, and I like the fact, you know, if I use my iPhone or my Android or whatever device I'm using, that, you know, there might be keys floating around somewhere. Maybe somebody has a master key. They can hopefully get the data. But, you know, I want my data safe. I want to make sure that other people aren't able to view it without, a necessary, I guess, investigation, whatever is needed to get the data. But even then, you know, you want to make sure it's just safe. I'd be terrified if I knew all the vendors were giving away access for all my data, whether it was cloud or otherwise stored to the government for, you know, a variety of purposes. So
there you go. Jesse LeGru, our guest, technical lead at Do It. I'm Larry Mueller. Here, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer with Jesse LeGru of the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. All our lines are filled at 800-642-1234. You can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. And email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Bob in Manitowish Waters next. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. Hey, we get really, really slow DSL up here.
Okay.
And I can't download Windows 10. It just times out. So any other ways to get it?
And that's the great question. I was trying to take a look to see if you can actually buy the media. And the biggest suggestion that they have right now would be to download and create a DVD. You might actually be able to find a local company around the area that would actually create one for you. But I don't have another retail location where you can actually purchase it. Right now they're trying to just say download. You can create a flash drive, or you can create a DVD to install completely offline off the network. But I wasn't able to easily find, you know, a place where you can just buy the media, at least at a quick search.
Yeah. Maybe the library at Manitowish Waters may have access to a little more power.
You can, no, they don't. You can save it to a flash drive?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, they have something called, it's basically a disk image or an ISO. As long as you have access to the internet somewhere, you can download it, and you can actually create a DVD from it, or you can put it onto a flash drive. Unfortunately, it still requires you to be in any kind of location where you can download that file. But I don't see any, at least right now from a quick look, any locations where you can actually just buy the retail media.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I thought of the library there because there's a nice, Manitowish Waters has a nice library. Francis in Random Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Francis.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Long-time listener. I just wanted to advise people who purchase a new system with Win10 already installed that they should make sure it's the latest version, which I believe is 1.5.1.1.
Yeah.
I say this because a computer I bought a number of months ago did not have that version, had an earlier version, and it had taken me hours and hours and hours to get the so-called November download. So I think that's important for you to point out.
Mm-hmm. Good thing to point out, Jesse.
Yep, it's and that's, you know, a lot of the issues when you get new computers. They might have been in boxes for who knows how long, but making sure you have all the updates, and even working with the vendors where you're buying computers, they might have options. But that can be a troubling thing when getting a new computer because, you know, a lot of them do sit in a warehouse. They're not kind of built to order. So you're getting a computer that might not have been plugged into the internet for, let's say, 3 to 6 months.
Well, that was one of my issues. By the time I found out that I didn't have an updated version that would not take the November download, my warranty had run out.
Yeah, so that's something you check right away. I guess you check right away.
Yeah, and the only thing I can recommend even for anything like that is, you know, whether you're buying it in a store, which is really where you're only going to have that flexibility, is to be able to take it out of the box and see if they can plug it in at the store to make sure that, you know, that you have all the updates. Or in some cases, you know, depending on the different shops that are around, even for Microsoft, you can get, and I'm not sure if you'd have to pay for this or not, you might, but they do actually have kind of offline installation media for kind of the updates from the past 6 months or even from the time it was originally installed. But it's difficult. You're never going to know from the outside of a box whether it's got the latest updates. And the only thing you can really do is turn it on and see if you can get it updated at the store.
Yeah, that's probably the best way. Francis, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. It's a good reminder for everybody, for sure. I want to give Ronald in Menominee Falls a chance to join us. Hi, Ronald. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a little history on this Windows 10. First of all, I did the update on my laptop, but I did it on my desktop also. And when I was running it, I lost my left click. Okay. So my son says, well, uninstall it and do a clean install of Windows 10, which I did. But then when I did that, I could not install some software like QuickBooks. Now, yet when Microsoft converted it, the programs ran. I don't understand what the heck happened.
Hmm.
So why is it that they can convert it and make it run, but when I tried, I can't do it?
Yeah, and it always depends because, you know, you can usually do something half a dozen ways, and if you don't do it exactly the same way every time, you might get a different result. In this case, you know, if you have issues with QuickBooks not loading, are, is right now, is QuickBooks actually installed, or is it not even installing?
Well, no, I went back to Windows 7.
Okay.
The problem was when I did a clean install of Windows 10, I could not install it. And yet, when Ridgemate converted it to Windows 10, it ran.
Yep, and yeah, sometimes for fresh installations or conversions, it might not work. So, you know, for example, QuickBooks, they might have what they call kind of a prerequisite checker. Am I going to work on your computer? And they might say, well, your computer's too new. I can't run it. If it's already installed, it might allow you to upgrade from 7 or 8 to 10. The program's already installed, so it doesn't have the opportunity to complain. And that could be one of the reasons why, you know, having an original installation and migrating or upgrading from Windows 7 to 10 would work. The only thing I'd, you know, usually recommend in those cases, and this is really the concern with migrating to any new operating system. You never know if everything's going to work. But usually for, you know, any of the specialty software I might have, I'll look at the vendor's website, see what patches or updates they have, because they might actually have on the QuickBooks site, depending on your version, an option to allow it to install on Windows 10.
They don't, though.
Yeah.
They tell you it's not compatible, but yet, like I said, when Microsoft converted, it worked.
Yeah.
But the other thing was I lost my left click, and I went to the internet and I found out there's a whole bunch of people who have had that happen to them.
Oh wow, yeah, and the left click thing is weird. Normally, I'd, you know, try a different mouse just see if something else is happening. But yeah, for the upgrade from, you know, 7 to 10, and you already have the application installed, it's probably not supported, obviously, by QuickBooks, but it might work. And those are weird things where people try to find workarounds, like, hey, I want to run Windows 10. I know this application doesn't, you know, run or install on Windows 10, but maybe I can install Windows 7, install the application, and upgrade. And those are weird workarounds that a lot of people do to have some of the software work. And, you know, it might function, but unfortunately, even QuickBooks might say, well, we're going to have a new version out in a year, and you're going to have to buy that version, and that version will be compatible with Windows 10. And, you know, it always depends on the vendor and with the current software version you have, but it's very likely you might even just have to wait until that. But if you did try the upgrade again to Windows 10, I would see if you even did have another mouse available just to see if you're able to get at least the functionality back.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Ron. Darren in Cecil, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Darren. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question, I guess, or I would prefer some feedback, is I have six machines. Five of the six have been upgraded to Windows 10 for using the free upgrade from some of Mad Windows 7, from Mad Windows 8.1.
Yep.
And I guess I'm wondering about the... what your thoughts are on the likelihood of there being subscription fees as we move past this free, you know, free trial or this free period of upgrading to either going back to the days of service packs or something similar, just because we've seen Microsoft as a trend with Xbox subscriptions paying to game and to maintain their servers and such and updates. The same with Microsoft Office going to subscriptions there. So is there a likelihood? What do you think the likelihood is? And what are the implications? Thank you.
Yeah, and as far as Windows 10 and subscriptions, there's, you know, they have right now, even for Office 365, you can get a subscription to that service, which allows you to use, you know, Microsoft Word Online. You can have it locally installed in your computer. You know, it's a possibility that they might have something like that for their operating systems as well. I don't see that happening with Windows 10, especially since, at least for the operating system, we haven't seen that in the past. They do have options, you know, later when you're worried about support, you can purchase extended support if you need more updates. But I don't see, at least Windows right now, having kind of a subscription method. They did talk about that, I think that it was quite some time ago, where Windows would actually be completely cloud-based, kind of how... you know, Chrome OS or a lot of the other items are done. Everything's in the cloud. Nothing's really on your computer. For those, you might have a subscription-based fee, but I haven't actually seen any of that yet. A lot of people are talking about it with Windows 10. Personally, I don't see that really happening, at least with 10, but maybe it'll happen at some point in the future.
Never know. Don't know yet. Thanks a lot, Darren, for calling. And Paul in Elkhart Lake, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Yes. Hi. Hello?
Yes, what can we do for you?
Oh, I have Windows 10, and I have a problem with organizing my favorites. I've imported my favorites from Internet Explorer to Edge. I understand that Windows 10 wants me to use Edge instead of Internet Explorer. And I can't seem to find anywhere in the favorite settings or anywhere else where I can organize them like I did in Internet Explorer alphabetically. So I'm wondering if that's possible.
And I actually haven't used Edge much myself. But a lot of people are also kind of complaining about the features between favorites with Internet Explorer and Edge. And granted, you know, they want you to use Edge because it's the latest version. It should be a little bit more responsive. And obviously, you know, it has updates and it's more secure. The only thing that I had seen was people actually kind of manually recreating them. But that doesn't seem to be a really great solution either.
Not very practical when you have so many.
No, it's really not. And generally I use, you know, different browsers like Firefox or Chrome. But it's a possibility that in the future they might have a patch to, you know, make that functionality change. But I don't see, at least right now, a very easy way to do that.
Okay, well, then I'll just have to live with this until the patch shows up.
Yeah, probably, Paul. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have John in Green Bay up next with a question. Hi, John.
Hi there. This is an Internet security question. I'm offered a lot of times to sign on with Facebook when I visit other websites, and I'm wondering if that's a safe thing to do.
And yeah, right now, especially, you're getting a lot more services that are, especially Facebook. I was kind of surprised how much they're using Facebook credentials to sign into just about any service you want, including, I actually even think, Amazon. Personally, I don't like doing it just because, you know, you have, basically your Facebook credentials are really then your credentials for everything, which if somebody's able to get to that account, you know, they potentially have access to many other things because they have access to that account. I would say generally it's safe depending on how the website is actually developed and how it's doing that handoff with the credentials or the approval. But let's say you're using 20 different websites to and signing in with your Facebook account. You're really using one credential for everything, and it puts, you know, a little bit higher risk if those credentials are compromised. The downside of even looking at it the other way as well, you know, then you might have 20 passwords and 20 usernames, which is a completely different issue. And it also impacts security because you're more likely to write it down in a post-it note or do something else. Generally, I try to use, I usually don't use myself, Google or Facebook authentication for other websites, but I will use password management applications so that I can have my passwords encrypted. It allows me to access the other sites I have without writing it down, and other people shouldn't have access to it. So
for example, are you using Keychain on MacBook?
Yeah, I've used Keychain on the Mac. If I'm using different websites, I might use the password vaults that are within Windows for Internet Explorer or within Chrome or within Firefox. But I've also used password management applications like KeePass or LastPass is another one that I've used, since they do have browser integrations.
Sure.
Where you can have all your passwords in one spot. You go to a certain place. It also has, you know, autofill options, and you can increase the security really depending on the different service that you use.
So are you recommending, for example, when you use Mozilla Firefox and it offers to keep track of your passwords, that you use that feature or not?
I would say you can use the feature, but, and there's always a but, the biggest thing that they have when you look at the security of stuff within Firefox or other browsers, what you'd want to do, if you do use Firefox and want to save passwords, I would state you should use a master password to encrypt all of those passwords that you're saving. So by default, if you have the right program, you can easily get all the usernames and passwords that you save on Firefox just from within the files on Firefox. But if you use, they have an option, if you go to the security tab within the options for Firefox, they have an option to use a master password. That will allow you to encrypt all those other passwords so people can't get to it. So I'd say use it, but use that master password to make sure that if somehow your computer got into somebody else's hands, they couldn't extract that information.
Thanks. Yep. That's all very helpful.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Vern in Cottage Grove, Wisconsin. On to you now. Hi, Vern.
Yes. Hi, folks. Good morning.
Morning.
I have read many online reviews of Windows 10 that have said it allows Microsoft to monitor the user's keystrokes, access the user's hard drive, and make unwanted changes to the local computer. Some of the more extreme reviews have even called it malware. I don't want to seem paranoid, but I wonder if your guest is aware of these concerns, if he's confident that the Windows 10 protects the user's privacy.
All right. Good question.
Yeah, the a lot of people have been concerned with the Windows 10, how much of your data is being sent off to Microsoft, what can Microsoft do on your computer. With Windows 10, there are options to disable a lot of those features. In the end, it doesn't mean that there might be other data that's being really filtered from the operating system and being delivered to Microsoft. I think in this day and age, it's difficult to kind of trust anything because you always know that whoever creates the software could potentially put something harmful on there. Generally, I'm comfortable with Windows 10 and disabling a lot of the privacy features, or basically enabling the privacy features, disabling the data being sent to Microsoft. And generally, a lot of companies will do this to get more information on how people actually use it so they can increase usability, gain easier feedback to make improvements. So usually that's what the data is used for, and it's not usually to steal the user's data. But in this case, I would probably actually disable a lot of those reports to Microsoft in the control panel. You can even do it during the installation of Windows 10. So as soon as you start using it, a lot of those features are disabled. But I think people are going to have increasing concerns with just about any device and that data being put on. But it's another reason where if you have a very good host-based firewall application where it can notify you, hey, your computer's trying to communicate to this entity. Do you want to allow this or not? So there are ways to try and secure it locally on your computer too. But I think that concern is always going to be out there. Personally, I'm comfortable with Windows 10 and a lot of those features being disabled. But if you do want to go above and beyond, using a really good host-based firewall that allows you to track much more granularly what your computer's talking to, it gives you a little bit more control. But you're also then babysitting your computer a lot.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. You're spending a lot of time with it. There you go, Vern. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And we finally have open lines now. Get you on pretty quickly with your question. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Evan on Facebook asks, what's a good way to learn Linux if you're a beginner?
So it kind of depends what you might want to use Linux for. So, they call Linux, they have different flavors. So hundreds of different versions of Linux out there. Most of them are free. One thing that I like to do if I want to play with a new version of Windows, they'll have something called live CDs or live DVDs. So you can download basically a disk image of Linux that will fully function. You actually boot from your CD drive and it will run Linux. So you don't have to reinstall your operating system or anything else. It allows you to play with it without necessarily worrying about needing to reformat your computer. I always say still keep things backed up because if you are in Linux, it can talk to your hard drive, and if you're learning it, you could accidentally do some bad things. Linux does open up a lot of powerful tools that if you type in the wrong thing, it might do bad stuff. But I like using live CDs. They're really useful. They're free. You just need a CD or DVD laying around or even a flash drive. You don't have to reinstall Linux at all. And it allows you to use it right away. So I think that's a great thing when you're just trying to play with it. And you can, use a lot of the different flavors of Linux. And you don't need 10 computers. You need 10 CDs or 10 DVDs, and you can go back and forth. So there's a lot of good stuff out there. It really depends on what you want to use Linux for. They have ones that are specifically for people doing security work or people that are just doing day-to-day word processing. So you can find pretty much anything you wanted to out there, but I would use those live CD options, or they even have network boot options.
Good points. Margaret writes to ask what it means when she gets a screen that says she has just had a crash dump. The screen is blue and it tells her to shut down the computer. She says, I do that, and then a while later I turn it back on and it runs fine again for days, maybe weeks, and then I'll get that screen again. It usually happens when I'm on Facebook.
Yeah, and so the downside with a lot of those crash messages, you never really know kind of what's going on and what's causing it. Usually on that blue screen at the very top, it's going to tell you what process or what application may have caused the crash. I would say, write that down or even take a picture of your screen so you can actually ask other people about it. There's a lot of great forums, too, online that will really give it great advice about it. If you are using Facebook, I have this feeling it's a browser issue, but it's causing such an issue with the operating system, it's actually breaking it. To find out exactly what it is could be somewhat involved. You might have to look through a lot of logs. There are ways to debug that information. I would say, the next time you see that error pop up, take a picture of the screen, and hopefully you can find some more information online, but it really depends on what issue's popping up. And it can be very simple, or it could be really involved. So let's say you always use Firefox and the application having an issue is Firefox and there's an update for it. Well, just update it. Maybe it'll resolve the issue. But I know Facebook and a lot of other websites do tend to take a lot of resources from your computer if you leave it open. So one thing I'd regularly do is actually maybe once a day just close and reopen the browser. It might completely eliminate that problem. But it might not. And that's where kind of gathering some of that more information is very useful.
Pete in Bark River, Michigan has a question. Hi, Pete. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I updated to Windows 10 just to play with it, see how it works fine. But I lost my DVD player. And I tried to download a new one, but the one I play
a
rented DVD anymore.
Oops, I lose you? Yeah, we just lost you for a minute. But anyway, you lost your DVD player. Well, how do you get it back?
Well, I tried to download a new one that was suggested, but I can't play a rented DVD.
Okay, so you're basically trying to play DVDs, and you're looking for the actual application that will play DVDs, correct?
Yeah, I used to use the Windows Media Center or Windows Player, and when I updated from 7 to 10, I lost the DVD capability.
Okay.
I downloaded a DVD player, but it's still nothing, so I'm just curious if there's any other suggestions you might make.
Yeah, and assuming none of the hardware changed or the DVD player itself changed, one program I actually use a lot, and I use it on Mac OS and Windows, is called VLC. Just three letters, VLC. Google that, and you'll find it, the VideoLand player. It's completely free. It actually works really, really well. But you can use it to play DVDs, normal video files, and it actually works really well. It's got a very small profile. I actually like it more than running the big programs that come with your computer. But I'm guessing that should allow you to play the DVDs that you want. There's many other programs out there that'll do it. If VLC for some reason can't play it, I'd probably be concerned there might be some other kind of hardware issue. But VLC works really, really well, and there's a lot of other players out there. But this is one player that a lot of people use, and it's free.
Yeah, that's the nice part. Pete, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, technical team lead with the UW Division of Information Technology. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Jesse LeGrew, who knows a lot about computers. He's technical team lead with the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, or DOIT. And great to have him along today. One open line at 800-642-1234. You can give a call for that. And just to sort of talk a little bit about DOIT, or the Division of Information Technology, you guys do a whole lot relating to computers there on the UW-Madison campus.
Yes, definitely. Right now, and DOIT has about 800 people. That includes full-time staff and students. But we do a variety of tasks. Not everyone within DOIT actually works on computers. But from what people, you know, see on a daily basis is usually one of our three store locations where we actually sell different hardware to students, faculty, and staff. But we also have a repair facility. So we actually do Apple and Dell warranty repairs. So not only can you buy and get software troubleshooting through the help desk and the tech store, you can also get the hardware repaired, so you don't have to go to the Apple store. You don't have to mail it in necessarily. Depending on the warranty, you might, at least for some of the Dell warranties. But generally, you can get, you know, a lot of your service in one place. And that doesn't include a lot of the things that, you know, DOIT does for the university in general, and how, you know, we're working with the different IT groups and communities on campus. So there's a lot.
There's a heck of a lot. Mary in Mosinee has a question for you, so we'll go to her. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My husband uses Internet Explorer as his default browser, and he's been getting the message, Internet Explorer has stopped working. And my advice to him was to quit using IE because I thought it wasn't supported anymore. But, Jesse, you've talked about Internet Explorer, so now I think maybe I should try to fix that if you can tell me how to do it.
Yeah, and for so Internet Explorer, I mean, they're moving to the Edge browser, so I probably would recommend go to the Edge browser to make sure you get the latest updates and releases. Otherwise, I believe Internet Explorer 11 is still supported. If you don't have 11 on your computer, I'd say update it to the very latest version. If you do have, you know, version 10 or before, you're going to want to upgrade because it's not supported. That could be, you know, part of the reasons that you're having issues. And in some cases, there are some websites that only work on Internet Explorer or a Microsoft browser, strangely enough. But I would say usually if I'm having issues, make sure you have the latest updates. But even with Internet Explorer, they have an option to clean out all of what they call cookies and privacy data, previously used websites, and offline cache data. Generally, I do that, make sure it's updated, and then try it again. But I'd probably recommend upgrading to Edge or even using a different browser if you wanted to. Chrome and Firefox work really well. I use both of those. But I'd probably get away from Internet Explorer since they are really trying to phase it out. You're still going to get updates for version 11. But if you're not at version 11 now, I would say just
forget about it.
Yeah, go to something else. Go to Edge. You can get a later version of Internet Explorer. But if you do have favorites and settings within Internet Explorer, assuming those aren't the reason, which it could be, that the application is crashing, usually Chrome and Firefox will actually allow you to import all the settings you have. So at least you're getting your bookmarks and everything else, and you're not starting from scratch. But I would probably recommend upgrading to the very latest Microsoft browser or using a third party if you wanted to as well.
All right.
So I teach a class at a senior center, and their computers all use Internet Explorer and not the latest version. So what would your recommendation be to them? To just go to Edge then? I can't do the downloads, but some tech person there could do it.
Yeah, I would say I would go to Edge, assuming they're Windows 7 or later. Go to, you know, a newer browser or even go to a browser such as Firefox or Chrome.
Okay.
It kind of depends on, you know, what different websites people have to use on those computers. I think the weird websites where it only works on Internet Explorer are kind of more corporate things you're going to see. They have weird plugins that just don't work on any other browser. So I think in this case, probably just about any browser is going to work. But I'd say update to probably Internet Explorer 11, assuming Edge is not a possibility. Otherwise, update to Edge. But the possibility of having a secondary browser just in case there are issues, such as Chrome or Firefox, is a good idea.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Fran in Milwaukee called to say she just bought a new laptop, and the salesperson asked for some personal, well, birthday information. Then he said that was needed to set it up. Was that necessary?
It's a possibility, but so depending on the computer that you get, you know, they might have security questions for you to answer. Maybe one of them is going to be what your birth date is. I'd say generally, no, it's really not needed. You shouldn't need to give away that information to anyone for a computer configuration. Even in those steps where you're starting up your computer for the first time, and let's say it's going to ask you to set up your security questions, you don't need the people at the computer shop to do it. They're designed so when you turn it on when you go home, you can plug all that information yourself, so you don't have to tell anyone. Even if it was for a security question, there's no reason you should be telling them, because that actually lessens the security of the system, because you're telling someone what your security questions and answers are. So I would say it probably wasn't necessary without knowing more about how they do things, but it probably wasn't needed.
Tom and Mequon, it is going to be your turn in just a minute, right after we hear from Robert and Beloit. Hi, Robert.
Good morning. We've been having a terrific time with the new update, new air that came in I think November or December, and it's on my wife's computer, but trying to get things ready for the tax people, and we just can get nowhere with this thing. At times we do, but then we lose stuff, and it's just a hassle. Does anybody know anything about Quicken around Madison? Anybody that we could talk to? Trying to talk to these people. Yeah, okay, you get somebody, except we tried over the weekend, and all their all their voicemail boxes were full. They wouldn't even talk to anybody.
That's a really good question. I think this is almost where, you know, you need somebody specialized who actually works with Quicken. And the first thing that actually comes to mind is a lot of companies that actually use it. Because I don't think there's necessarily a computer shop where you can find a Quicken expert. I would actually, Quicken would be my first support path.
I'd probably go there in the week, during the week instead of the weekend. I was thinking about my own situation. I had something not with Quicken, with another outfit, and I actually paid extra money to have the quicker service. And even that, on the weekend, was like a two-hour wait, online wait. So I did get service the next week when I went during the week and called early in the morning on Monday. On a Monday, I think it was, I was able to get some service faster. So that may be another way to do it. The weekends tend to get are busier than the week. At least that was my experience anyway.
Yeah, and the only other things that I'm taking a look for, because some people do, they teach Quicken.
Yeah.
There might be organizations that teach it and might actually be able to assist with some kind of either training or potentially troubleshooting. Granted, they usually don't do that, but it's a possibility for any of those training centers where maybe they can give you a list of contacts. Hey, you can try this, or I can reach out to them. But if they train it, it means that they have somebody who's at least an expert in using it, and maybe they would be able to help if they could, you know, kind of link you together with them.
So look up Quicken.
Yeah,
instructors or something?
Yeah, I would say Quicken instructors or training.
Okay.
The only reason I had said it is they actually do have a Quicken training in Beloit.
They do.
And, you know, is exactly who does the training, if it's a third-party company, if it is Quicken or Intuit. But there are experts flying around all over the place. But they might have a better idea how to get access to one of those experts.
There you go. Thanks, Robert, for calling. Tom and Mequon, now, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to ask about two of our laptops. We have Windows 7, and we're thinking about upgrading to Windows 8.1. We can get a good price on it. I think about $40 per laptop. How do we, or would you recommend just going straight to 10? I'm kind of a little bit wary about Windows 10 and would like to stay down to 8.1 if I can. What would you suggest?
I would probably So even before you upgrade to 8.1 or 10, I would say, you know, make sure you have a backup of all your stuff, just in case things go weird, which every now and again they do. I'd probably recommend, both for cost and potentially ease, hopefully with some of the improvements, to go straight to 10, just because it's completely free. You don't have to spend any money on it. You can upgrade one computer, see how it goes. If you do feel you have issues, you can always roll back, and you could always upgrade to 8.1 instead. But you're probably going to want to test it. The only thing to be concerned with is some of the specialty applications you might have on your computer. If they don't run on Windows 10, then you know you probably don't want to go that route. But that might even be the same for Windows 8.1. But my gut reaction would be to upgrade to Windows 10, save the $40 per computer, and just make sure to have all your stuff backed up. But, you know, I don't know what kind of software you have. It's a possibility you go to 10 and something won't work. So that could be another reason for going to 8.1. But 10's free. You're going to have support for much longer. And for some of the different items, you know, you might get a benefit from it if there's a feature that, you know, you might use on a daily basis. But, yeah.
There you go. You'd go with 10, and we can talk some more. I know we have questions coming up about taking 10 off and how complicated it is to take it off. Jesse LeGru, our guest today, a technical team lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Information Technology, and you can join in. We'll give you that number. It's 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us if you'd like too. The email address is talk@wpr.org, or go to our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'll be back after the news. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at your computer today with Jesse LeGru. Jesse's the technical team lead with the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And I'm Larry Mueller, and I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. And Bob in Madison has been waiting a bit, so let's go to Bob. Thanks for calling, Bob. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'm a senior. I'm blessed with my old age, I've used a computer for years, but how do I restore away from Windows? I find Windows 10 is just overwhelming.
Okay.
And I'm guessing you had upgraded from Windows 7 or Windows 8, probably in the recent past?
Well, a year and a half ago, I bought the computer.
Okay.
And whatever was on there. Now, it's one of those two.
Oh, I see. You don't remember if it was 7 or 8.1. Okay.
So I'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully for rolling back, you know, you upgraded in the last, you know, let's say year and a half, you're actually going to be looking in the Start menu and in Settings. There is an option for Update and Security, and then an option for Recovery, which allows you to do a lot of things, but it also allows you to roll back to a previous version of Windows. And it should say, so if you had Windows 7, it'll say roll back to Windows 7. If you had Windows 8.1, it'll say, you know, go back to Windows 8.1. So it'll tell you, you know, whichever one you had before. And hopefully it will
work.
It will work right off the bat. I'd always recommend backing anything up if you can. But go to the Settings and Update and Security and Recovery, and you'll have the option to roll back to Windows 7 or 8.1, depending on the version you had.
I think I did that once and did revert, and so I had to call in a technical assistant to get me back on Windows. Now, and I think I pushed the wrong button because I used extensively Microsoft Office, Word, or Excel.
Yeah.
And I had a program on there on Genealogy, and no way could we recover that program.
Hmm. Well, would you recommend going back and trying it again then, Jesse? It sounds like Bob may have just pushed the wrong button.
Yeah, I would try it again. I would still, you know, back up all your data. Even if you need to, you know, let's say it's Family Tree Maker or whatever program you might use for genealogy, usually you can reinstall it. Even if you don't have the media, you can probably get it from the company to reinstall it. But you're probably better off even running an earlier version of Windows 2 if, you know, those programs aren't completely compatible with Windows 10. But I would say try it again. Hopefully it's going to work and you're going to have all the applications that were there before and things are going to function, you know, perfectly fine. But rolling back just as much as going forward and getting an upgrade, you still have a risk of whether things are going to function exactly as you're expecting it. Yeah. So I definitely do a backup. Or even, you know, if you do have other, you know, computer repair locations around the area, even see if they may have other recommendations or other things that they can do. And, yeah, depending on, you always have options, but some of them just might be more technically in-depth. But the options there, I would try it. If it doesn't work, you always have options for other companies or Microsoft. Otherwise, you can say, hey, bring the computer into a computer expert and say, hey, this is what I want. What can you do to make sure that I can get back to functionality? Even if they have to reinstall Windows 7 from scratch and migrate your data, that's always an option. Yeah. As long as you have, you know, any of the other installation files you have for your genealogy or other applications. It just depends how comfortable you are with doing the rollback yourself. But either way, there is a way to get back to Windows 7. It's just it's uncertain whether the recovery is going to function properly.
Yeah. And to back up, somebody said, how do you back up things? And I said, okay, I'll ask Jesse that again. Just to...
And there's multiple ways, depending whether you have Mac OS or Windows. Windows does have, even within that built-in recovery feature, has an option to back up your computer. They do have features that are just built into Windows where you can do that. If you do buy external hard drives, many of them will actually come with applications to do backups, and they can do it on a scheduled basis or just a one-time basis. Mac OS has Time Capsule or Time Machine, which
Time
uses
Machine.
A Time Capsule or an external hard drive, which will back it up over the network or to an external hard drive, and it works really well. There's also a lot of cloud services out there to back up your entire computer. I do actually use one of those myself because I know it's stored. In this case, it might be in the cloud, so you know it depends how comfortable you are with the cloud or what's in there or not. But if you know my entire house burned down, I know that my data is somewhere else. Other people might use a safe deposit box and lots of other crazy things to make sure their data is safe. But a lot of options out there. It just depends on kind of how much you want to spend too. External hard drive and the built-in application is probably the cheapest way to do it.
Ken in Appleton has a comment. Ken, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, first I'm going to say that I'm still mourning the loss of Windows XP Professional.
Okay.
But my question is, I have downloaded Windows 10, and there was something that popped up called Slim Cleaner Plus. My question is that recommended or needed?
So, and I took a look in Slim Cleaner, or Slim Cleaner Plus, which is actually a paid version of the application. Assuming it's, you know, a legitimate application that, you know, wasn't somehow installed in your computer in a nefarious way, it seems like a pretty good program. It's like a lot of other applications out there, AdAware or Malwarebytes, Super Anti-Spyware. They just clean up your computer, make it run better, and if you do have bad programs on your computer, it helps to find them so you can get them out. So as long as it's the actual application, it's, you know, something that could be useful to you. It depends on kind of how you use your computer on a day-to-day basis, how much you're going to be able to take advantage of it. But it seems like an okay program. I haven't used it myself, but it is highly rated and seems to, you know, do what
there
it needs
to. Yep, there you go, Ken. Chet and Dells, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got Windows 10 on my computer. I converted from 8 to 10 when they said, you know, I could do that free. And then after a couple of months, my start menu would not work. I would hit on the Windows button there to go into my applications, and it would give me an error message and tell me to log off, log back on, and maybe it would function. I've been online and looked at a number of different things, too, and went on and did administrative work on it and put some stuff in. Still, and then it'll sit there for a couple of days, and if I leave it on and then I go back to it, it works. And Edge also won't work when this happens.
So that, yeah, that's, it could be a difficult problem to kind of track down. So it could be Windows itself, or it actually could be your user profile. Do you have any other user accounts or other people that use that computer?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just looking at something online on that too recently, and they said that create another user profile.
Yeah.
Yep, and that's something I'd recommend, because at least it will it'll give you an indication of whether it's Windows or if it's your user account. So, you know, like any computer, you use it on a day-to-day basis. You might have taken this profile from computer to computer for 10 years, but some of the things in there might be causing some of these issues. So if you create a brand-new user account, and I would say don't migrate any of your settings, and just see how it acts. If it works fine for, you know, a good amount of time, well, you are pretty sure that it's going to be your settings. And then you can work on migrating any of the data you need. I would say if it does work, set up any of your other independent program settings manually just to make sure you don't bring in anything that could, you know, give you more corruption. If you create a new user account and it doesn't work, well, it's probably an issue with Windows. It could be potentially a hardware issue, but it sounds like it could be an issue with Windows. The only other thing that would come to mind, if it was hardware, memory is a very common item that might give you these intermittent failures. And MemTest 86 is a free program you can download and run on your computer to run basically a hardware diagnostic to see if some of your memory is failing. But I would say create the new user profile, see how it goes. If it doesn't work, look for any other kind of repair features within Windows. It'll kind of reinstall core components. But using a program like MemTest 86 should allow you to verify whether, you know, at least your memory is functioning properly or not.
There you go. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Evan and Racine, hello to you.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure thing. What's on your mind?
Well, I asked a question on Facebook about the Linux, and the part that you didn't actually answer was the part about the Beowulf cluster, which my friend and I are making.
Oh, we didn't have that up on the screen. Sorry.
Anyway, the question that I had is, my friend and I are making what is it called, a Beowulf cluster, out of just some old recycled computers that we got our hands on, and one thing that he brought up was network booting, where one node or the master node has the operating system on versus all the computers having the operating system on. And I was wondering about that and some other things. So do you have any experience with Beowulf clusters at all?
No, I haven't actually used them myself at all. There's a lot of great options for doing it, especially free. And it always depends on what you're using it for, but even a lot of the live CDs, like Nopix has a cluster option to make a Beowulf cluster. Haven't used it myself, but it seemed to be a very easy way where you don't have any dependencies on any one specific node. It really depends, though, kind of what you're going to be, I guess, what kind of jobs and processes you're going to be submitting to it.
All right. And do you know if all of the computers have to be the same, or can they just be anything? Like, not all the processors are the same. Do you know if that matters?
Usually with cluster computing, it could matter in some instances. My guess is even with the Linux options out there, you're going to probably have a lot of leeway. So you're probably going to be able to actually do this with different architectures. It will submit jobs and threads to different computers. Some might run slower than another, but eventually when all the data comes back, it'll usually combine it in a way that, you know, you're not going to notice the difference. You might just be waiting for that really one slow computer to finish up until you get all your data back.
Oh, there you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Evan, for calling. Appreciate it. Daryl emailed to ask if it's true that QuickBooks is not supported by Windows 10.
All right.
Is it supported by Windows 10 or is it not?
So QuickBooks, and it really does depend on the version of QuickBooks. I was looking a little bit before to find out whether it was or not. Usually QuickBooks, they're going to come out with new versions pretty frequently. But they also have a lot of different versions of QuickBooks, whether you're using it in kind of a corporate capacity. They do have online features as well. But they do have, and I'm trying to just verify really quickly here, it does look like they have, because they have point-of-sale applications as well, they do have an optional update so that you can make it function. But it really does depend on what version of QuickBooks you're running now, whether you have to update a different one. QuickBooks 2015 looks at it has other features that are required, but QuickBooks 2014 and before are not supported. So it looks like you need the one from the latest year to have it function, at least supported. And if you are using a different version of QuickBooks, it really just depends on, I guess, what the specialty of it is.
Hank in Brantwood has something. Hi, Hank. Thank you for calling.
Hi, afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just to start right off the top here, I know nothing about computers, but I do have an HP 15 notebook with Windows 10 on it. I picked it up about a year ago, brand new, less than a year ago. When I do my emails, when I get into the subject box and try to type something out, it takes forever to type something out. I got that circle that comes on, and my cursor disappears, and it just takes forever. Is that an internet signal issue, or is there something on the computer itself?
It could be either. What application are you using for your email?
Yahoo? Is that right?
Okay. So you're using, you know, like a web-based email then?
Sure, yep.
Okay. Usually it could be internet connectivity related. It's kind of difficult to know. Do you have any other slowdown issues when doing any other kind of web browsing activity or just when you're using email?
I have a very slow internet up here in the Northwoods.
Brantwood, I was going to say, Brantwood is kind of isolated a little bit from...
Yeah, we're out in the middle of nowhere. I got wireless, but I have 1.5 megabytes according to my provider. That's what I get here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the issue. Like I said, I don't know if that's... And I don't know nothing about these computers, so...
Yeah.
You know, but it is kind of aggravating going on any page...
Yeah.
Everything like that. It takes forever to download or to load up, whatever they call it. And then the emails are just completely frustrating.
Yeah, one thing I might actually recommend, and this, people with, if you do have lower speed internet connections, I would actually recommend setting up an email client. So kind of getting rid of, not getting rid of the web browser, but actually use an email client for your day-to-day email usage, because it will download emails in the background when you're not, you know, actively using the computer. It should be more responsive when actually drafting and sending emails, but it should hopefully separate a lot of that aggravation with the responsiveness due to internet connectivity issues and just slow down. So I'd say if you're using, they have mail applications, Outlook, Thunderbird, a lot of stuff out there, I would set one of those up for your email, and I think it'll at least remove some of those aggravations.
Okay, I can give that a try. I think I understand what you were saying.
Yeah, that could be a big help, especially on something like that. And I know Brantwood. I've been in that area many, many, many times, and it is kind of in the middle of nowhere a little bit. Hank would not argue with me about that. But a nice area. I love that area, for sure. Thanks again, Hank. Kurt in Iowa. Your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Hello, Larry and Jesse. I have two computers with 8.1. I'm considering upgrading to 10, but they're both 64-bit, and I've heard that if you take the free version of 10, it drops you to a 32-bit version, and I wondered how consequential that is. And then also I'd like to ask a question about this snooping as to, I assume Microsoft does not warn you about that and tell you how to turn them off. So is there some place online where I could get a list of all that and directions on how to turn them off? And also, I wondered if they have any sneaky trick where they automatically turn them back on when you do an update.
Yeah.
So I can, at least as far as, so I'll cover the privacy one first. So for privacy, under customized settings on Windows 10, you can just turn off kind of location features and some of the other items. If you actually just Google Windows 10 privacy, there are going to be a lot of things that pop up with screenshots and tell you how to navigate and get rid of those items. Now, is it possible during an update that it could get re-enabled? That's a possibility, and you never know until that update comes out. So if you were concerned and you did have updates coming out, normally it wouldn't happen until like a large service pack upgrade. Just take a look at the setting and just make sure it doesn't change back. But I don't think that it's normally something you wouldn't have to worry about, but I have seen stuff like that happen just due to updates.
Okay.
Okay, and on the 64 to 32, dropping you to 32-bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and normally I would be kind of surprised if it did drop you down to 32-bit, but let's assume it does. Any of the issues that you could really have, functionality, I think it's going to be fine. Things are going to work well, whether it's 64 or 32-bit. I'd be concerned if you already had 64-bit applications installed, because they wouldn't work on the new system if that was the case. The only other concern is if you have, you know, a large amount of memory on your system, let's say 16 or, 8, 16 or 32 gigs memory, you know, a lot of RAM.
Four, right?
Okay. Then you should be fine with 32-bit, and you shouldn't have any issues. I still would be surprised if it did go back to 32-bit, but if it does, I don't think you're going to have significant issues unless applications you already have installed are 64-bit.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Ray on Facebook wants to know if her Mac needs security software.
And I would say yes. So any computer you have out there, whether it's Linux, Mac OS, or Windows, you should have security software. Windows comes with some security software as well as Mac OS does. But having an antivirus program is a great idea. Even if you don't feel you're ever going to have a virus affect your Mac, having antivirus on your Mac will also ensure you're not distributing data that has viruses. So by making sure your computer's safe, you're keeping other computers safe that they might be interacting with. So definitely recommend it. Backups, antivirus, host-based firewall, which is built in, but definitely would get an antivirus program, and there are free or paid ones all over the place.
And Phil wants to know how he can change the new the name shown on the start title.
And if I'm understanding it correctly, it's probably the name, because normally it has your first and last name.
Yeah.
If that's the case, you're going to want to go to the user settings and control panel. You're actually going to just rename your user account, so the display name is whatever you want it to be, and generally that's going to change that title on your start menu. If it isn't your name and it's something completely different, there are actually a lot of applications out there that will tweak your start menu however you want. They might not be Microsoft supported, but they allow you to customize things quite a bit more. So it just depends whether you have Windows 10, 7, or 8, and you can find lots of things that will allow you to do some more interesting things to your start menu.
All right. Jesse, it's always a pleasure. You come back and be with us again? I hope so.
Of course.
Excellent. Jesse LeGrew is knows a lot, doesn't he? Holy cow. He's a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. He tends to focus on desktop and lab security projects, but as you've heard, if you've been listening, he knows a whole lot about everything when it comes to computers. So it's great to have him along, and we will get him back in the future to do this all over again. Just take a look. Yeah, 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn talks about with the author of Evicted, the story of eight families in Milwaukee who are living on the edge. And then tomorrow at this time, we'll learn about, among other things, genetic testing for dogs from Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. You stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.